We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a headline from the Globe and Mail, read by Harriet Cass.
Severed foot found on the British Columbia shoreline. Officials stumped.
Thanks to Grania Mary Adair of Linton for spotting that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Carrie Quinlan. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupiters and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, which naughty people are to be badgered by badges?
This is Louise Casey, who used to be known as the Asbo Queen. And is now just known as the Asbeen, for sure. And Blair was very fond of her. She was the crime czar or larceny kaiser or pilfering empress or something. But then when he went, Brown tried to get rid of her. He sent her off to do a report on crime, hoping that, you know, she'd get in too deep and someone would take her out because she knew too much. But she's come back, and Brown is now so weakened and demoralised and broken that he's prepared to sign anything, but he's ready to confess, you know. And so she put in this report, and he's agreed to it all, and it contains some quite mad things, like people doing restorative justice kind of community service things should wear brightly coloured tabards, so that instead of the public thinking, oh, that's nice, there are some young people fixing up the community centre, the public thinks, look at those bastards fixing up the community centre. And he's angry about it and can't throw fruit. Obviously, it's too expensive now. But we'll go home and get pitchforks and have a far more robust and historically accurate approach to crime.
Do you not think we should just go back to the time when criminals wore stripy jumpers and masks and had a bag called swag on it?
There's a lot of stuff about, you know, they're going to wear these luminous tabards because it, as a, you know, a garment of shame, but I don't think luminous tabards make you feel ashamed. They make you feel strangely important, don't they? Because we went filming recently, and we did a night shoot, and, you know, for health and safety, everybody was given a luminous tabard. And the first thing they all then did was went and stood in the middle of the road. You somehow imagine that the tabard makes you important and invulnerable.
Make them wear cones on their heads from the traffic thing, and then people will think they're engineering students. Look at those students repairing that youth centre. That's a nicer thing, you know.
But, I mean, there has been this whole thing about Asbos have become a badge of honour, and it's like the government have gone, badge of honour, brilliant, let's actually make them badges.
I misheard when they said that these are going to be badges of shame, and I thought they said badges of shame. But that was a different story, wasn't it? It was a lay-by and a Welsh MP. It was a different thing. Offenders carrying out community sentences may be made to wear high-visibility bibs under far-reaching reforms to the criminal justice system. The reforms are designed to restore public confidence in the system, and I think bibs will do it every time. A spokesman for the Cabinet Office said she would not comment on the report until it had been published, by which she meant found and handed in to the BBC. Carrie, now, can I just say, sometimes on the news quiz we are accused of not taking the news very seriously. It's unfair. I think it's not our fault that Ruth Kelly has such a wide stance at the dispatch box, but listen, we don't take seriously the news. We're going to rectify that by discussing a very important story. It's of huge international significance. It has been strangely overlooked by most of the country's media. Carrie, where has Scottish destiny hit the rocks?
Ah, yes. Now, this is a... Actually, it is quite a serious thing. It's,
yes,
it's one man standing up for the rights of a nation,
yes,
which you don't get often. It's maybe a once-in-a-generation gentleman. It's the Shetlands, and is it Dave Hill?
His name is, King Stuart.
King Stuart is declaring independence for the Shetland Islands. Because as you...
Well, just 1 acre to start with, I think.
Well, yeah, but you've got to start somewhere.
Sorry,
don't
yes,
you?
Sorry.
You know, you don't want to leap ahead.
No.
Otherwise, you've got... Yugoslavia. Mm. because you probably know that in 1468, the King of Norway and Denmark didn't have a dowry for his daughter for the King of Scotland, so pawned, essentially, the Shetlands. I'm sorry, I'm telling you stuff you already know. And Stuart Hill has realised this, and so reckons that the Shetlands aren't actually a part of the United Kingdom. So he's declaring independence for the area of about an acre around the tent he lives in on a Shetland island.
But if it originally belonged, sorry to be troublesome about history here, to Denmark, then presumably I might have some rights here.
Well, it depends. I haven't spoken to a pawnbroker about how it entirely works.
Well, it's funny that he pawned the Shetlands, because I've actually got some Shetland pawn. I've got Crofter's Wives 4.
Actually, if you look up Shetland ponies, there's some surprising websites that come up.
I never have looked up a Shetland pony.
Well, it...
he pawned the Shetland Islands. There must have been a long discussion down at the pawn shop. He must have taken his wife's jewellery and some old trophies that his grandfather got for fishing. They say, no, this stuff's all worthless. Have you got anything else? Well, I've got the Shetland Islands. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. What's his name? His name is King Stuart.
And he's from Essex. He really is. He's from Essex.
I've had my country stone clad.
And he's setting up, he's applied for planning permission to build the first permanent building on there out of polythene sheets and turf, which means that the Shetlands are going to be ruled by someone who doesn't understand what permanent means.
Can I just be clear? He's declared independence and applied for planning permission. It's hardly Braveheart, is it?
And Norman Lamont's from Shetland.
Is he?
Yeah.
How do you know things like that?
Wikipedia.
That sounds like something really disgusting, doesn't it? Sounds like something
sex
really...
with basket.
It's like... Yeah. It's like...
What I liked is he said every pensioner should do this. And I just... What happened to knitting? Anyway, I've just got to sense my thing. I'm going to just very quickly tell you this. I had a letter from somebody called Bethan. And she says, Dear Sandy, it broke my heart to hear that the BBC had never tried to take down a website with a pattern for you. Now, I don't know if you remember that the Doctor Who knitting pattern was taken down some time ago. She said, so I decided to knit a mini you.
Actual size.
and here it is. Oh, it got an R. It's a...
I think we should describe it for listeners at home.
What do you think?
He'd turn it...
That's Edith Piaf.
I think I saw that person in the crowd scenes in The Wicker Man.
It's like a woolly Frankenstein. Look at it.
What worries me is that I quite like the tank top. And were it life-size, I probably would wear it.
It is life-size.
Tell her to knit a fill. That should keep her busy for a
few months.
Suffolk-born Stuart Hill has declared him... Oh, Suffolk-born.
Oh, OK, I thought he was from Essex.
...has declared himself head of the state of Forvik, a tiny islet in the Western Shetlands, to encourage the Shetland Isles to break away from the UK and become a crown dependency. He's called his country Forvik because it's Viking for I think the medication is wearing off. Phil, why is inflation leaving members deflated?
The just... whip-crack smart gang of chimps that look after our government have decided to only take, is it 1.5% pay rise? They've decided not to take the usual. They normally get some kind of index-linked pay rise. And as inflation is, at the minute, it's a little bit out of control. I think they've decided that discretion would be the better part of honour and to just not take as much. And then, of course, as with anything... it's supposed to be popular. Immediately, David Cameron does it as well. And then that other fella in the Lib Dems, Clegg, Grubb, Cuthbert Dibble. I remember his name by going, it's not Grubb, who's the last of the firemen in Trumpton. So I go, Hugh, Pugh, Bun McGrew, Cuthbert Dibble, Clegg. That is literally how I remember his name. I think they should get paid, they should get performance-related pay. Then Alistair Darling would probably have to pay us so much back, the economy would write itself.
But we're faced with stagflation, and if that happens, the governor of the Bank of England has to send a strippogram to the Prime Minister.
I was watching all the panic. There was a lot of panic on the TV this week. And I was thinking that the answer, you know, the forecast on inflation, the answer to the question, how bad will things get? There's probably a direct correlation between how bad things will get and how often Trevor McDonald asks, how bad will it get? Because it's just this... I was thinking, because in the old days, you know, bad stuff just happened, didn't it? You know, if you lived in York in the Middle Ages, you woke up one morning and the Vikings were burning down your house.
Yes, Sandy.
Yes. But what you didn't get...
Well, you took the Shetlands from us.
But what you didn't get in medieval days was weeks of Trevor McDonald saying, the Vikings are on their way to York. Who is to blame and how will it affect house prices? Which is what we get now, isn't it? I mean...
You see, that I think that there is a slight element... Andy mentioned Trevor McDonald there, and that whole thing, that when the news is quite bad, is that there is this... Because he has to do his cheerful donkey story at the end of the news, they get more and more outlandish the worse the news is.
Yeah.
And I mean, if he had been around in medieval times, and it was, you know, and finally, a witch was burned today in Chippenham. Look at her go. We'd like to thank Mrs. Jackson of Chippenham for this delightful tapestry of the event. And to be honest, he'd really have to go, honestly, today he'd have to go, today at Ascot, a monkey riding a St. Bernard, dressed as a jockey, playing a guitar, won the Grand National. That's how good it'd have to be to cheer me up, please.
The original story was about inflation. It creeps up to 3%. Isn't that some rapper, 3%? trying to show how with it I am.
And you've shown exactly how with it you are.
What is it, darling? Is it some other percent?
It's 50.
Oh, is it?
But I believe Gosh. It's pronounced fitty.
Or indeed fitty.
50%, well, we'd have to turn the gas off completely. Gordon Brown has ordered a pay freeze for all ministers. Oh, we should order a freeze for all ministers. That'd be popular. And suggested MPs should only accept a pay rise comparable to other public sector workers. Inflation has hit a 16-year high, as indeed has Amy Winehouse. Talking about her hair. A senior minister told the Times this was gesture politics of the worst kind, which translates as, but what about my conservatory? So, 2 points to Phil there and an extra point to Jeremy. Andy, who's having bad luck with the Irish?
This is the Irish voted no thank you to the... that's the furthest I'll be going with any accents this evening.
The man of a voice.
The Irish rejected the... Now, I get confused. They rejected the constitution, the proposed constitution.
The Lisbon
Treaty. There's a lot of controversy about what it actually...
Have we reached peace with your people, Sandy?
Well, there are monies outstanding with the Shetlands. That's all I'm saying. Fair to say.
And the Irish, they said no. And it's fantastic, actually, because there's a brilliant response from Nicolas Sarkozy. He's gone into denial. Basically, as far as he's concerned, it didn't happen. He's married to Carla Bruni. He's not going to... everyone's just kind of pretending it didn't happen. And they're going to ratify the treaty anyway. I believe Britain has already ratified the treaty, although apparently that doesn't commit us to anything. I think I just sense the whole audience going into a coma.
Well, I like that the government has said, basically, there's no reason to pay any attention to the Irish votes. Well, apart from, you know, when they're voting on that 42 days thing, I seem to remember all Irish votes represented principled integrity. Do you remember that? Britain has finally ratified the Lisbon Treaty despite claims that the measure is dead in the water after being rejected last week by an Irish referendum. The European Commission is pushing for a second vote in the hope that the Irish will vote the right way so the EU can get on with more important business, like criticising Robert Mugabe for staging a second vote in the hope that... At the end of round one, the scores are that Phil and Andy have got 4 points, but Jeremy and Carrie are just in the lead with 5. We start round two with a quote from RTE News.
Speaking as it became clear that the No campaign had won the referendum, Taoiseach Ben Cowan said, "This is a clear vote in favour of European integration."
Quite understood it. Our thanks go to Justin Whiteley of County Donegal, who sent us that. Jeremy, whose famous name has got them into whose coup?
This is the coup in Equatorial Guinea.
It is.
Now, this is a rum old do. Simon Mann, who is facing trial and seems to be a little bit desperate, and he's desperately trying to sort of get off because he's facing a very long sentence. And he says that Mark Thatcher was one of the key figures in organising the overthrow of a government. No, come on. Mark Thatcher, who now lives in a gated community to stop him getting lost. And because in his defence, Mark Thatcher said that he supplied the money. This is how he got off with a fine in South Africa and a suspended sentence. He said he put the money up, but he thought it was for an air ambulance. Because he's got such a reputation as a philanthropist, you know. As if anyone's... If he'd said, I put the money up, I didn't realise it was for a coup, I thought it was for sharp things for children, people would believe him.
But, actually, he's an old Etonian, isn't he? I'd imagine that prison, which is, what is it, sort of, it's pretty hideous, isn't it? The near starvation and violence, medieval conditions. Give him a top hat if he'll write at home.
I found out a couple of weeks ago why the Eton uniform is like that. It's because, apparently, they're still in mourning for George IV.
Really?
That's why, yeah. They took on that the whole uniform when George IV died, and they haven't quite got round to... Ooh,
they need to move on.
They really do. They need to have a competition, yes, like they had on Grange Hill when Danny Kendall redesigned the new uniforms.
I just thought they had mad love for Isambard Kingdom Brunel.
What was so special about George IV? I mean, apart from he came between the 3rd and the 5th, what was the...
I think that's the main thing.
That's the principal thing about it.
But he was Hugh Laurie, wasn't he, in... That's probably it.
Old Etonian mercenary Simon Mann has named Mark Thatcher as ringleader in an attempted coup in Equatorial Guinea. Why do they call it that? It's not on the equator. It's just the whole country's a lie.
Is it worth a guinea?
No, see? There again.
Unlike the Shetlands.
Phil, who won't be lapping up any law changes?
Apparently... The same laws to license a branch of Starbucks apply to licensing a lap dancing club. Mm. And so there's a proliferation of them, and people are getting all in high dudgeon about the fact that there's this massive expansion of all these lap dancing clubs everywhere. You know, they've got the same laws that apply to coffee shops to lap dancing clubs, and I'm thinking, well, where are all these lap dancing clubs? There's just so many of them now. There are 300 in the country. In the country, everybody. How many branches of Starbucks are there? So, anyway, apparently they're very cross that people... and that what they want to call them now is they don't want to call them lap dancing clubs anymore. They want them to rename themselves. They want to call them sexual encounter clubs. Which sounds a lot more wholesome, doesn't it? Yeah. It almost sounds like Attenborough should be there. And here she is, coming up to the table now. Gyrating, she's removed the bra.
She's presenting.
I delicately tuck £20 into her knickers.
Apparently, if you haven't got cash, you can use a swipe card.
Can I just say, it's not a sex encounter club, it's a sex encounter establishment.
What, isn't whatever.
Isn't that any nightclub?
The funny thing is, they call it adult entertainment. I've been to one of these clubs in Canada because, you know, I couldn't get to the Moose Sanctuary.
Is that the name of the club, the Moose Sanctuary? That'd be a rather good name for a lap dancing club.
Brown and horny. And they call it adult entertainment, but if you've been into one of these places, they're like somewhere that has been specifically designed by a 14-year-old boy.
Have you ever been, Andy? You want to admit to us?
I can't. You know that little thing, if you're not higher than this.
Ministers have vowed to change the Licensing Act to stop the proliferation of lap dancing clubs, which currently enjoy the same status as cafes, pubs and karaoke bars. I like pole dancing, developed as an erotic dance developed over many years by bored firemen. It's a fantastic thing. At the end of round two, Phil and Andy have got 8 points, but Jeremy and Carrie are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here's a quote from the rugby player Tom Vandell, spotted in The Guardian.
Getting loaned out to a Division One side was pretty embarrassing, said Vandell, who was first capped for England as a teenager. A lot of hot air was blown up my arse, and I think it went to my head.
And our thanks to Barry Webster, who sent us that. Kerry, who's, like, totally hacked off about the possible length of their detention?
Oh, like, this is the hacker, right, who's, like, so in trouble.
Is it?
Is it Omar Khan or
it
something?
It is Omar Khan, yes.
This school kid in America at a very prestigious school in California who was getting Fs on his exams.
Well, when I was a teenager, getting an F would be a bloody miracle, I think.
I don't understand how school worked in the old days. he was getting Fs, so he hacked into the school computer and gave himself A's, so that he could get into a better college. And he got caught, and he's looking at 38 years in jail.
Well, until he hacked into the jail computer.
Well, exactly, that's the thing. He'll get his one phone call, make it on his BlackBerry, and suddenly it'll be 6 weeks in the Maldives, rather than...
We all did stuff like that at school. I remember when I was a kid in Denmark, I cheated on my herring identification test. I used a herring aid.
We didn't have technology. I had to go do a gig in Southampton where I went to university last year, and I was there and chatting to the woman. She said, "What do you think of the new building?" I said, "Oh, what was here before?" She said, "Oh, this used to be the computer sciences building." And I jovially said, "Oh, you know, when I was here, we didn't even have computers." And I thought, "Oh my God, that's true."
Teenager Omar Khan could face 38 years in jail for hacking into his school's computer and changing his test grades from F to A's. He's from Orange County in California. Oh, that's where the Americans make all those jumpsuits. And the Daily Mail is outraged and has launched a campaign to get the sentence increased. Andy, where might the call of the wild get a girl into trouble?
This is a study of the sex life of chimpanzees, Sandy.
Yes.
Which obviously, you know, is an important thing. And I think what they discovered is that lady chimpanzees...
Lady chimpanzee-esses.
Lady chimpanzee-esses. when they're in congress with a mate, they keep the noise down.
Mine doesn't.
Basically, the female chimps are trying to have sex with as many males as possible, and so they're trying to be as sneaky as possible about it, and they don't want to attract the attention of females who are higher up the social grouping.
Are you sure this is about chimps? Because it sounds like a Newcastle discotheque. I didn't want her getting all over me, like, if I've got a fella on the girl. I sound like a monkey when I'm gunning.
It does put a new spin on Leo Blair's conception, though, doesn't it?
I love this as an excuse for women. I love it. I go, oh, of course the earth moved for me, darling. If it wasn't for our complex hierarchical society, I'd have been yodeling my socks off.
In the paper where it said about this, it described it as copulation calls. But that sounds like some awful late-night version of Opportunity Knocks, doesn't it?
I don't know why there's always this, whenever there's, you know, kind of some monkey sex story. I recall visits to the zoo when I was a schoolboy, and they never stopped having sex. And
it was
generally, they were generally always pleasuring themselves. That's the other thing. And I don't know if it was like everyone had this, or it's just me. Do I exude some crazy monkey pheromone that just, they see me and they start, maybe, you know...
Maybe that's what it
bashing
is.
...bashing the primate bishop.
Honestly, I've never seen...
The Archbishop of Canterbury. Giving Robert a runseat. I don't know, what do you call it?
This is ruining nature for us, that perverts are basically recording animals and then making it all dirty and nasty, because my image of chimps is that the female has a tray of tea and a headscarf, and the male is wearing a knitted waistcoat and smoking a pipe.
It's not possible that the female chimps were keeping the noise down because they knew they were being filmed.
Promiscuous female chimpanzees keep quiet during sex to avoid conflict with love rivals, according to a study of primate mating behaviour. Yes, indeed, chimps keep quiet while mating, proving that the chimpanzee is the most British of all the primates. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Jeremy.
This was sent in by Mr. G.F. Willett of Bedford. And it's an article from The Observer, and it's about Tiger Woods' injury. And it says, as Woods grows older, it has become clear that his Achilles heel is his left knee.
Ms. Quinlan.
This is from Kim O'Brien, and it's the menu from Superfish in Cheam, which is the chip shop I used to go to when I was a kid. And it says, because of the limited space in our restaurant, couples are requested to share the same table.
Phil.
So this, yeah, thank you, Mrs. Sampson of Daventry, for sending this one in. This is from the Sunday Times. A woman who gave birth on a fancy dress hen night did not know she was pregnant. Ali Ashwell from Newcastle felt poorly during a trip to Blackpool and went to rest in her hotel. A few minutes later, she went into labour. A spokesman for Blackpool Victoria Hospital, where Ashwell and her baby son were taken, said, it's very unusual for a baby to be born in this situation. Miss Ashwell was dressed as a bumblebee.
Andy.
This is from Paul Davis. It's from a magazine called Professional Engineering. It's an article about the new aircraft carriers for the Royal Navy. It's got the most terrifying last sentence I've ever read. An innovative feature of the aircraft carrier design is the automated weapons handling system. In the US Nimitz class, 300 sailors are required to handle weapons, but on the CVF, with the automated handling system, the figure will be reduced to just 16 sailors. Now, from the Deep magazine, almost up to the point of use is all fully automated, says Simon Knight of the Aircraft Carrier Alliance. The system is based on the automated baggage handling system in Heathrow's terminal.
Let's take a look at the final score. Phil and Andy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Carrie with 13. Before we leave you, here's a news item from the BBC News website sent in by Ben Austin.
A trio of super-Earths have been discovered. The new worlds, which circle the star HD 40307, are 4.2, 6.7 and 9.4 times the size of Earth. They're named super-Earths because they're more massive than the Earth, but less massive than Uranus.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Carrie Quinlan, Phil Jupitus and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Troxvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Tass. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Matthew Morton, with additional material by Stephen Carlin and James Sherwood. The producer was Ed Morrish.